This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 240 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, not one, but two world-weary travellers, Mr. Glyn Lavender and Mr. Mike Holman. Gentlemen, good evening.
What? No, Mike, that's not a pillow, dude. Get your hands off it.
I've got to let Glenn have his sort of pithy and introduction here.
So. Of course.
Hello, everybody.
It wouldn't be the same without it. So, yeah, talk to you, Bruce.
Yeah. So what are you doing in Melbourne?
I have no idea. I've come over to support Glenn in his weekend endeavour up in...
To keep him awake.
Yeah.
Probably with a cattle poke.
Up on the old movie set up in The Man from the Snowy River up the road towards Bendigo, isn't it?
Wombat
State National.
So we've got a big casting call weekend on this weekend, and I fly Mike in every time for that to give me some, encouragement, support, assistance, and someone to carry the bags.
That's right.
And to tase you to wake you up.
Exactly.
So how was America?
Shut down mostly.
Yeah, yes, of course. They reopened it today now that you've gone. They waited for you to leave.
Close down the country the day before I get there, reopen it the day after I get back. No, America was good. It was, they're going through tough times over there in America. It's economically, they're probably the worst I've ever seen them.
Yeah, right.
And, so it's fairly depressing to see. You go through small towns and half of the shops are closed down, and the other half don't look particularly much better than that as well. So, pretty depressing. But, the people like that, all lovely, had some great events and had a lot of fun, met some nice new people, caught up with some good old people.
Yep.
And good times had by all.
So numerically, was the turnout as you expected, or was it a little soft because of the economic situation?
The majority of workshops are full. There's just a couple that were down low and one that... we had to cancel due to low numbers, but that was a first ever time for this store, and there just had too much other things going on, I think, to promote it properly. So, but other than that, everything was pretty much as expected.
Wow, cool.
You give people a reason to want to, to learn, or give them a reason to spend money, and they will. But maybe they won't spend if they don't have a decent reason to spend.
Yeah.
That there's an event coming up that's not going to happen again every single week. Well, they'll find a way to make it happen if they want enough. And and that's kind of, I think, what happens with these events.
Yeah. All right. So it was a good trip all around then.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed. My New York Firehouse shoot got canned.
I was wondering why I hadn't seen anything on Facebook about that.
It was the guy who had organised it all the way through. His shift got cancelled the night before, and he tried to contact me because I was still, acclimatising to the locale and had got my emails and everything set up.
Yep.
I didn't get it till knocking on the door, and he said, you could knock on any firehouse, and they're all friendly. And this gruff, unpleasant man opens the door. He's not here today, and slammed the door. So that was a bit disappointing, but we'll do that next time I go over. So
was it the same shoot that you were going to have the couple in the period costume?
No, they were down at then in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Those guys. So I got to shoot those as well. And he was actually the great might be another great in there nephew of James K. Polk, who. The 11th president of the United States.
Wow.
So and he actually imitates his great 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 grandfather, who was General Polk, in the war. So
wow.
Yeah, so they were nice people.
Cool.
Haven't had much time to process those photos. Haven't had much time to process any photos. An odd one here or there, but they were good. They were troopers because we had a heat wave on the coast that was supposed to be cold. Cold wave on the coast is supposed to be hot. So it was 90 degrees pretty much every day in New York and Pennsylvania.
Right.
And, which is, 30, give or take.
Low 30s, yep.
And there's this poor guy in massive woolen overcoat and leather gloves and leather boots and big heavy hat. And yeah, he started out 320 pounds. I mean, he picked up about high 180s. Over 6 hours work. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So I saw the photos of that on Facebook.
Yeah, there's like, I put one or two up there on Facebook. Yeah. I can see
those. Cool.
So they were good, and but it was beastly weather. Beastly.
Yeah, right.
We were to be walking around in the blazing sun. But, no, that went well, and said so at some stage I'll get some more photos up from that.
Cool. I'll look forward to it.
Yeah.
Mike, so you're over in Melbourne for the casting call weekend.
That's right. I was expecting, Clint was assuring me that we're going to be into the mid to high 20s. I think it was 4 degrees this afternoon.
It was 4 degrees and we were in sleet at one stage.
Yeah, so that's good. It's almost like New Zealand
weather, really. New Zealand summer.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go tour, for the weekend. So I'll be back on Monday.
Excellent. And what have you been up to back in NZ?
Oh, in New Zealand. I've been busy.
Tell them about your awards. Go on.
Wow.
Yeah, Mike Holman, the man solely responsible for the rise in the price of gold in New Zealand because he's hogged it all.
No, I've been fortunate. This year I was awarded New Zealand Travel Photographer of the Year, which by the NZIPP, which is our local, the New Zealand National
Institute of Professional Photoshoppers.
Yeah, that's the one. Excellent. And retained my title as Auckland Professional Photographer of the Year for the second row, which was just
lovely
as well. So, and went from Master of Photography to Fellow with the NZIPP as well this year. So
fantastic!
Yeah, don't you hate people with talent?
So. From a business perspective, what sort of stuff are you working on at the moment?
At the moment, I've been shooting a lot of architecture, a lot of high-end property, and also a mixture of resort and hotel photography at the moment.
Nice.
Which is I've been sort of wanting to target, and I've been sort of targeting those sort of customers the last 12 months or so. So that's sort of coming in to fruition at the moment. So, it's doing well. So I'm really enjoying it. It's keeping me busy, too. It's actually keeping me busy most days.
Yeah, three shoots on this day, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I finished last night. The night and popped into bed and then popped on the plane over here this morning.
So is it one of those things where, you know, once you've picked up one client, then word of mouth kind of keeps you busy for the next 6 months?
Good question, Bruce. I wish it was that easy. When I went, I transitioned about 2 years ago from a full-time job into my passion, which was photography, which was I was doing part-time.
Right.
So initially I was thinking I was going to do a mixture of portraits and bits and pieces as well as some commercial stuff. And I had done books and calendars as well part-time. Mm-hmm. That was giving me an income too. But I had to really focus what I really was passionate or what I wanted to shoot. So I discovered that after a few months that I wanted to focus more on the architectural and travel and resort and high-end property sort of market and do something a little bit different with that. So what I did initially was it was tough getting the first customers. It was just a hard slog just basically getting on the phone and targeting the sort of people I wanted to work for, like the architectural companies or whatever, or hotels, and just ringing people.
Yeah, right.
And emailing people. But I'd always talk to them in person because it's a lot easier to do that than just emailing someone because you get noticed that way. And I'd say I get maybe 1 in 10, or maybe 1 in 20 as a positive response.
Yep.
And that was a hard slog to start with. And it took about 6 months. And I built up a sort of, got a few jobs here and there and built up sort of maybe half a dozen clients. But then it sort of got to a stage where I was getting referrals and word of mouth.
Yep.
Through customers that I'd shot for. And now it's mainly referrals and word of mouth, and it's keeping me busy. But it took about 18 months to get to that stage.
Margie, he walks around everywhere with his medals around his neck, yeah, New Zealand's biggest head, all that sort of stuff. He's got a wall. He's got a
comeback. Yeah, he's just going to come back. So, I mean, you know.
Now, before Glyn completely derails the conversation, I just want to jump back because it strikes me that all of those areas that you just mentioned, like real estate, you know, hotels, resorts, architectural photography, none of those things were the kinds of things that I had seen you posting on your social media channels.
Oh, no, I still shoot those as well, but they're just not commercially as viable as...
No, I don't mean now. I mean, like, going back 18 months, 2 years, before you turned this into your primary source of income, when you were still shooting for pleasure, it seems to me that the majority of the stuff you were doing was landscape and still life-type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's because I wasn't doing photography full-time, so I was just posting what I was doing in my spare time when I wasn't doing my other job.
Then you had to find things that paid, and trees don't pay.
Well, no, they pay. The book pay quite well. I mean, it's very hard to make a living out of shooting landscape photography and selling prints and bits and pieces like that.
Sure.
So, I mean, I'm shooting every day at home, but I still love shooting. I think I'm still passionate about it. But for my own creative, part of my creative
growth,
that's that, thank you very much, is I still shoot a lot of travel and landscapes. And that's what you probably still see a lot of that on Facebook, because I don't post my commercial work on Facebook.
Sure.
Because a lot of times you don't have permission to do that anyway.
Yeah.
It's not appropriate to post that sort of work on there unless you have permission from your customers or they want to
have a social media plan. Don't you do a sneaky peek?
Oh, now and then. No, I don't do a sneaky
I hate the sneaky
No, so it's not really appropriate when you're shooting for a company or a business to share it without their consent and things like that. So,
well, there's a reason I brought this up, and that is because a couple of weeks ago, myself, Lee Gatland, and Chris Bellier, we had just a private conversation going on Facebook, and Lee made the comment, and I don't know if you're familiar with Lee's work, but Lee is an avid plane spotter. He loves aeroplanes. He gets out there every single day, rain, hail, or shine, and shoots aeroplanes that are landing and taking off at Mascot. It's his thing, you know. I don't get it, but he gets it. He loves it, and he does it.
You're an audio nerd.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Absolutely. Right. But anyway, so we were having this conversation, and Lee was saying, I feel like I'm at the point where, you know, I've exhausted this. I need to decide, you know, what kind of photography I want to focus on next. And I said, dude, before you go any further, I need to go and find you this link. And I went and found him the link to a blog post that was written by this photographer in Helsinki. And he called it the Helsinki bus station analogy. And the whole...
Bang Theory episode.
Yeah. the whole theory behind this Helsinki bus station analogy, I'm sure we might have mentioned this on the podcast in the past, was he said, when you start out with your photography, you start out shooting one particular thing because that's your thing. It's what you love. And he said, and it's like hopping on a bus at the bus terminal. And all the buses leave the bus terminal together. And they all follow the same route for the first couple of kilometers. And as you progress along with your photography, you know, people go, what are you shooting that for? Don't you know, Ansel Adams did landscapes long before you, or, you know, Herb Ritz was doing killer portraits long before you came along, you know. And so you go, oh, you know, what am I doing wasting my time? And so you hop off and you go back to the start and you try at something else. You think, oh, I'll go and do weddings then, I'll go and do real estate, or I'll go and do some other form of photography. And he said, you know, the point of this post that he was writing about the Helsinki bus routes was, stay on the effing bus, because the longer you stay on the bus, eventually the bus routes start to diverge. As you know, one bus peels off and goes that way, and another bus peels off and goes the other way. And the longer you stay on it, the more you eventually end up out in your own territory where no one else has been. And
I've done that in LA, got on the wrong bus one time, and I ended up in the mountains, couldn't get back.
Could have ended up in Helsinki. It could have been worse.
That's true, but I know what you mean. I would agree with that. I tend to agree with that, but I think a lot of people, I mean, it's a good analogy, Yeah. But I think people, when they start off with photography, shoot everything. Not just one thing. They try and shoot everything they can.
They're out, that's me.
The coffee mug and everything at the tables and the people through the windows and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much out there on social media, and you've got with like Kelby Training and all these other places that people get ideas and what they want to shoot, that it can be quite confusing, and they're sort of you really have to put an effort in to decide what you're passionate about and follow that route.
I came out with an analogy when I was in the US about photography to photographers.
Yep.
I said, you're driving down the road one night looking for someone to go to have dinner, and you want seafood. And on the left-hand side of the road, you see a restaurant. And guess what?
You're on the bus.
No, it's just, I'm on the bus in Helsinki. <that's right. laughs> And on the left-hand side, you see a seafood restaurant. And on the right-hand side, you see a restaurant that does seafood, burgers, tacos, Tex-Mex, you know, steaks, ribs, chicken wings, you know, vegetarian. Which one's going to give you the better meal?
The one that specializes in seafood.
Same thing with photography.
Yeah.
It's true. That's true. I agree.
If you want to stand out as a photographer, specialize.
Mm. Yeah.
Find something and, yeah, stand at an airport necessarily every day and shoot planes if that's your bang.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I mean, I used to think even in New Zealand, because it's quite a small market, I mean, the whole of New Zealand is basically the same size as Melbourne.
There's some very good
seafood. And I think you have to be more of a generalist. But I've discovered actually the more that you, if you can specialise, the more successful you'll be even in a small market.
Do they have buses in New Zealand?
I think they do.
There you go.
But, you know, I found it, I'm much more successful if I'm concentrating and specialising on what I want to. But you just have to target what you want to be shooting.
Hmm.
I thought I might like to shoot portraits initially when I went into photography full-time, but I just wasn't passionate.
I'm sure you had to put up with people.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so let me just bring this back. If
I'll leave the buses alone.
No. If real estate and hotels and that sort of stuff was what you wanted to shoot commercially, why was that not what you wanted to shoot in your spare time prior to making it an income?
Well, as you probably know, and a lot of people might know, before I was doing photography full-time, I was working for New Zealand, so I was in the airline industry, and I was flying and traveling a lot. So it was a time issue. I mean, when you're working on a full-time job, I was mainly just specialising my photography in landscape and travel, and I was obviously getting a part-time income from that as well. I just didn't really have time to sort of explore those other areas. I've always liked them, but I was happy just shooting with the landscape and travel, which I did for maybe 20 years.
Yeah, plus, I guess if you're travelling all around the world with the plane, the kind of lots of travel opportunities, the plane.
Yeah. So I thought to myself, I mean, I like the travel part, right? So I'm thinking, okay, so how can I maintain sort of this lifestyle? Might as well go to photography full time and maybe still get a little bit of that travel action in there. And I'm thinking, well, maybe we should maybe target some hotels and maybe do some stuff for them and try and have a bit of a crossover and maintain a few things that I was had in my previous job.
Yeah, right.
And I found I love shooting that sort of style of photography, and as well with architecture and bits and pieces as well. I was never hugely passionate about shooting portraiture or weddings or anything like that.
Yep.
So, you know, and then to make an income when I'm doing it, I'm thinking, well, there was good money to be made, especially shooting corporate stuff or commercial stuff as far as on that line of photography as well. So it just made sense to target that when I was doing it full time. So it was a different sort of mindset from part time to full time. And you've got to look at the you know, just how viable it is to make an income and what's going to bring the money into. But,
yeah.
But I wouldn't, you know, even I couldn't go and shoot weddings. I don't think that would just do anything. You know. So it's a mixture of lifestyle and what you're passionate about and getting that balance, I think.
Excellent.
Mm. Yes. So, but no, I still love shooting travel and landscapes. And I mean, travel and landscapes, if you're shooting travel, a lot of that is you can combine hotels and shooting resorts and things as part of travel photography.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm.
For sure.
So speaking of me...
Feeling a bit left out there, Glenn.
Not at all. I was just dozing off in the corner. The dulcet tones of Bruce Williams is putting me to sleep. Speaking of Bruce Williams,
yep.
Are you excited about the two new Sonys?
Yes. I'm familiar with the A7. I'm not familiar with the other one.
It's the pirate one.
The A7R.
Right.
36 megapixel, Bruce. That's pretty impressive for that small size camera.
Yeah, but still a 35mm frame. It is amazing. Lee Gatland sent me the link only today saying, this is pretty amazing stuff, what Sony are doing. And the most impressive part about it all is the pricing.
Yeah,
it's $2,500, isn't it?
They're really handing it to Canon and Nikon to, get in the game.
I know you guys talk about Trey and his HDR and bits and pieces, but Trey Radcliffe, I should say, who's in New Zealand now, lives in Queenstown, and we sort of are on sort of catch up now and then. And
you're often on the same bus.
That's right. And Trey made a prediction maybe a few months ago, 6 months ago, about the rise of the mirrorless cameras and sort of how they're going to really come into their own in the next 4 or 5 years, and I think the SLRs will become more specialized. And I mean, that's what's happening. And I find, especially with when you're traveling, those Sonys would be the size of them.
But the sales figures don't back up this mirrorless challenge to DSLRs, being that they've died in the bum in Europe and America. And only in Japan are they strong sellers.
Right.
And traditional DSLRs are continuing to grow in those countries. So I think things like the new Olympus OMD M1.79632 or whatever it's called. and of course the new Sony's, there's some challenges to serious, in parenthesis, serious cameras within these mirrorless cameras. So
what do you reckon is the impediment to the takeoff of the mirrorless system, Glenn? Do you think it's the lag in the screens, or is there something else?
It's most SLRs are bought by men, and they can't compensate by having a small camera. They need a large camera to be able to compensate for these things. I think that's really where it boils down to. That's why your really big lenses, your really big cameras are popular.
Well, that new 200 to 400 Canon you just pulled out the other day.
My 600 binocular
that
lens.
That doesn't sound right.
I think it's a mental break, actually, Bruce. I think it's got to come to terms with using a camera that doesn't feel or look or handle like cameras they're used to using.
Yeah.
I really think there's a big mental – and the other problem is if you are a working photographer, using one of those, you even look more like Uncle Larry and less like a professional photographer because your gear looks like everybody else's.
Yep.
Yeah, at least with your big white lenses and et cetera, et cetera. At least you stood out because you had a big camera, therefore you must be a good photographer. Well, remember, the mindset of people out there, you take great photos, you must have a good camera.
Yep.
And you've got a great camera, therefore you must be a good photographer.
Yep.
That's the mindset of the general public. So if you don't have that gear, don't look like you've got the gear, maybe they don't trust you.
Mm. Maybe there'll be a range of aftermarket accessories that are just empty plastic boxes that you can bolt onto these mirrorless things to make them bigger.
1981. Way back in 1981, I used to work for a company called Fletcher's Photographics. And in our monthly magazine, we had a 110 housing, 110 camera housing, which is a little basic point-and-shoot cameras, that fitted over the top of a Nikon F3 SLR camera. So when you're traveling, no one would steal your big expensive camera. And then we had the Nikon F3 housing to go at the top of the little 110 cameras to compensate. it could be just that we all have these inflatable outers for our cameras to make us feel better about ourselves.
Interesting.
Speaking of new gear, did you see that Sing Ray have brought out the new 15 stop variable neutral easy for me to say neutral density filter?
No, I didn't. But wow, 15 stops.
Guess what, Bruce?
What?
Sing Ray.
Yeah.
Brought out a 15 stop filter.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Do you know what's even more amazing?
What?
There's 5 stops more than their 10 stop.
Yes, it is. That is crazy. Why would you need 15 stops?
When 14's not enough, Bruce, what else do you expect?
This one goes to 11.
Did we just mention about compensating and desire to have more than everybody else?
I'm just going to set this exposing, and I'll be back next week.
I mean, if you're doing long exposures during the day, if we're not talking at the either end.
Yeah, right.
So if you wanted to do a midday, but wanted to get some nice cloud movement, say, with with architecture or something, 15 stops is probably ideal, actually.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I mean, I wouldn't think about using it sort of at dusk or something like that. But I mean, if you've got a bright day during the day, I think that's quite a good.
And I suppose the other advantage of having 15 stops, just taking what you were saying, Mike, one step further, if you're shooting architecture through the middle of the day when there are a lot of people around, having a 15 stop filter would mean that most of the people would actually disappear from the shot.
Yeah, well, there's two ways of doing it. You can do that with an ND filter, of course. Then you can do with multiple shots in Photoshop and then put them together and remove all the people that way.
It'd take a lot less time.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a whole – it opens up a whole new creative sort of ideas of what you can do and, you know. But, I mean, I use a 10 stopper. I use the B plus W ones. I have a 3, a 6, and a 10. So they're not variables, but – I think the Signalizer would make great filters. I wouldn't imagine that would be a cheap filter.
No, I think it'd be well into the
500 US probably.
Yeah, $500-$600 price range. Mm. Which is, if you're doing a lot of that stuff, it's
pretty good. That's a 50mm lens right there.
That's it, yeah. Speaking of 50mm lenses, did you see the new Nikon 58mm lens?
1.4.
8mm better than their 50mm, apparently.
Why 58?
Well,
58 used to be a classic
focal length
back in the day for lenses and Nikon lens and so they're bringing back sort of a classic, I think, highly regarded as a portrait and sort of
remember we call them legacy lenses.
Yeah,
so from their legacy series, from there. They're things from their past that were incredibly well respected. We'll bring them back with a modern twist.
Right.
Yeah. Why invent something new?
Fair enough.
Yeah. So I'd like to see that carried over to lots of other stuff. Yeah, lots of the other old, cool old lenses and cameras they used to have. Now, we've often said, yeah, we'd love to see them come out with something like a Nikon FM digital or just a nothing but straight manual. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to see someone it's a challenge for a manufacturer. I'd like to see someone come out with a digital SLR with no screen. No, I'm serious.
On the opposite to that, I just
two screens.
Photo shooting the other day with an SLR, shooting, not looking through the viewfinder, but holding an SLR with a viewfinder in front of them and looking at back of the camera on live view.
That's what they do.
People just don't realise it.
That's what they do. But I'd love to see a digital SLR with no screen, like a student's camera.
Well, why not just put gaffer tape over the screen?
I suggest that to my customers all the time to do it. But I'm serious, as a student's camera to learn photography,
yep,
has to have no screen, no chance of them cheating.
Well, the thing is, most DSLRs do have the option to go into the menu and turn off the image preview after you've taken a shot.
Oh, you cheat.
Who will cheat?
And then make them wait 2 days to get their pictures.
2 days until the until the memory card door opens.
And you can only have 24 or 36 at a time.
You have to buy a 36 exposure memory card.
That's right.
Oh, see how those old people long for the days in the past.
Oh, well, I wouldn't go back to film.
No, I wouldn't go back to film either. Way too inconvenient.
I got excited in the days when they had the technology to print data between the film,
film strips.
The film strips, like what the shutter speed and
the date, it took it.
Yeah, that was exciting. It saved me having to write it down on a notepad. It's good.
the first metadata, eh?
It was indeed. But nowadays, I couldn't imagine back in, the information, and the instant gratification that we have now.
Yeah. Speaking of instant gratification, there's the Sony 2014 World Photography Awards are open for submission for those folk out there who like to submit to those kind of torturous things.
Okay.
So I just thought I'd whip that out there and just mention that. I saw that in passing today. I thought, well, that's usually a pretty good competition as far as the quality of submissions go.
Right.
So if anyone's into that, we'll have a customer come out to the casting call weekend this weekend who said she submits photos to competitions around the world, so the photos we take this weekend better be bloody good. No pressure there at all.
Yeah. You just set it up on the tripod for her and she can come and press the button.
Now, before I went on leave to work my buns off, I mentioned about the David Duchemin video series that was for download.
Yes. You were downloading them just before you left.
Did you? Have you listened to any yet?
No, I said you were.
Oh, I was. I thought you had. Yeah, so I've listened to it. I've watched the first one.
Right.
The first hour of 14 hours.
Okay.
I've got to say, I think I got more out of that first hour. I can't remember what exactly because I was on the plane watching it and I haven't written it down.
Right.
But I think I got more out of that first hour than any other first hour of video watched on a plane between Melbourne and LA in October 2013 of any video I've ever watched.
Fantastic.
That's
a huge credit.
No, it was excellent. It was once again his ability to how he thinks about photography and thinks about vision was excellent. And so once again I'd highly recommend anyone who's contemplating, you know, wanting to improve the way they see, think and about photography to jump on board and get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I should get something out of this. There's twice I've plugged in for nothing. What am I doing?
Aiming for a refund there, man.
So I ran two first new workshops whilst I was in the States, and using just only LED lighting.
At the streets.
So using LED light panels.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, they were a heap of fun.
Really?
Well, I thought they would be. I knew they'd be great. I knew people would get a lot out of them because it's continuous light. They can see what it's doing to the subject.
Yep. Now, were these rectangular panels or were they like light sticks?
Well, one was round, so very much like a beauty dish sort of shape.
Oh, okay.
Which was excellent. It was quite powerful. In fact, that was in Pennsylvania. Then LA, I also had round ones, but they're very small and not very powerful at all. But right. I had two of them.
Okay.
Two small, not very powerful ones was slightly better than one small. The big one would have been
about that big. Okay.
Yeah, about 14 inches / 35, 40 centimetres.
Right.
So it was a good size and incredibly powerful.
And at full power, what sort of distance could you work your subject from that light source?
Well, depending on your
aperture, of course.
Depends what sort of light you were shooting in. Because I mean, if you're trying to combat, we started out the workshops in diminishing daylight.
Yep.
It was at sunset. So depending on the intensity of light behind, because you still have to balance what's happening in the scene.
Yeah.
To get the scene established the way you want it to be. So shooting into a sunset, we're probably only 2 feet away from the subject.
Yep.
The light, but we were getting some pretty darn impressive shots. And as the light fell, you could pull it further and further back and power them right down, and you could light 3/4 of a body easily.
Yeah, right.
So they weren't a treat. I said that most people got so much out of them because they could actually see the light. And I call them the art of lighting workshops.
Okay.
Because it's all about learning how to see light and what it does and how it's shapes and sculpts.
Yep.
So they were a great light source to work with. So, and they're amazingly cheap these days. These big LED panels.
Yep.
So if you're out there and thinking about learning about lighting, not a bad alternative.
So
I've not seen any workshops with LED lighting. So I'm going straight back to New Zealand to start my own and copying.
So these round LED panels.
Yeah.
Do they break apart into four quadrants, or do they fold in half or something?
No, they're just it's a solid metal. Like it's like a wok. So a wok of light.
Right.
You take a wok
quick,
so storage, I'm imagining, is a pain in the butt.
A little bit. But it's no worse than carrying a beauty dish around, which are
right. Fair enough.
Because most of the time, with those, you're in the studio anyway. But you whack it up on a light stand and you start walking around. It's not too bad at all.
Yeah,
plus,
right.
I had people carrying it for me, which kind of always makes the...
Didn't inconvenience you at all.
I was fairly comfortable the whole time. But I pitched a young 17-year-old girl over there being modelling for the first time, who I've got to say had one of the most perfect, balanced faces of any model I've ever shot.
Wow.
Absolutely. So to look at her in real life, it's like, yeah, it's all right. And then you put a light on her, it's wow.
Yeah, right.
A stunning, stunning face. So I'll send that image through to you to put up and show her just how well a balanced face, proportionally balanced face, can just make a photo work, you know?
Yeah, right.
So she was a little corker of a kid. So she's got a long way to go. If she wants to be a photography model, I guess she could do a good job with it.
Yeah, right. Nice.
And so I got young Mike here has got one last thing he was just showing me earlier today that I think was pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
What was it? The time lapse video.
Yeah, we're talking about time lapses, Bruce. And have you done any time lapse at all, Bruce?
I haven't shot any myself, no.
Because one of the sort of great time lapses around is a guy from Sydney. I think his name is Keith. Lutet, is it?
Lutet.
He did initially one of the first ones he was well known for was, I think it was called Bartum, and it was done in Sydney, and it was like a guy had sort of fallen off the rocks, and it sort of was washed out, and the Westpac helicopter came and picked him up. It was like a time lapse or all of that. Have you seen that, Bruce, or not?
No.
That's brilliant, that one. Yeah. So he does time lapse with tilt shift lenses to give a micro world.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah.
So he sort of mixes those two genres together.
Wow.
But this one, he also uses, what effects would you call it, Bruce? Well, I'm calling you Bruce, Mike.
I have no idea. Yeah. Bruce.
Bruce. Michael Baldwin. Bruce. Michael Baldwin.
The latest one we were showing was called Lion City, and it was shot in Singapore.
Lion City.
Right. That's
just translating to New Zealand.
If you Google, or if anyone just Googles Lion, that's what I said, Lion City.
Yeah, but you said in New Zealand.
Lion City. By Keith.
Just type Lion City Keith.
Yeah, Keith Lutet. His surname is spelled Lutit.
Right.
And, so Google, it's on Vimeo and YouTube and all that sort of thing. And this one he uses the time lapse with the tilt shift and also like a selective focus sort of effect as well. If you have a look, Bruce, you'd be very impressed how he does
it. It's like he uses like a wave of focus through the shots.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's got this miniature world in time lapse, and this focus that comes from buildings are completely obscured, just come in this wave into focus, and then become obscured again. And
oh, okay.
It's astounding. That
is astounding, isn't it?
All right.
I hate to think of the amount of work involved in doing it.
Yeah.
Well, I shall definitely find the link, and it'll be in the show notes for anyone else who wants to check it out. So
it'll be fun when you see that first, I'm sure.
Cool.
No idea at all how he does this stuff, but pretty cool. Yeah. But as I said, people with far more talent than myself really do sicken me, so I try not to pay too much attention to them.
All right. Well, you fellas sound like you're pretty wrecked, so should we wrap it up early?
Yeah, I'm going to go to bed.
Yeah, fair enough, matey.
I can stay here and talk for a couple more hours if you want, Bruce, but I mean... Since I'm at Glenn's place, I've
got it. Well, Mike, good to talk to you again, mate.
Yeah, nice to talk to you. It's been a while since last time I saw you was in.
Mate, it was 2 years. Can you believe it's been 2 years already?
No, I can't.
Yeah. I can.
It was two years ago this month that we were over in New Zealand. Yeah.
Oh.
It's like an anniversary.
That has gone.
Do you want me to leave you two guys alone?
It's crazy.
No, it's gone quick, Bruce.
It has. Way too quick. So anyway, great to catch up with you. And Glenn, good to have you back in the country.
It's good to be here.
You guys enjoyed the casting call weekend. Sorry I can't be down there to join you.
Yeah, thanks for making the effort to come down, Bruce.
No worries.
Yeah, it's the last one too, so we might go back in a few years, but last one for a while up there, so
I think right. A few more players would have fallen down. Yeah.
All right, and I guess we'll talk to you next week.
We will.
Nice to talk to you, Bruce.
See you, mate.
Bye, everybody.
Shutter Zinc, another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shutterzincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shutterzincpodcast.com.